The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able. The flag salute will be led by Representative Roblin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We are privileged to have for our opening ceremonies today Tiffany Hill, who is going to be reading a poem. Tiffany is a student at the Oregon School for the Deaf, and Gail Robertson is here to voice the poem for her. They are both guests of Representative Nathanson.
I will read the poem first, and then Tiffany will sign the poem. I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud, by William Wordsworth. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high over hill, boughs and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. Beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze, continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in a never-ending line along the margin of a bay. 10,000 I saw at a glance, tossing their heads in a sprightly dance. The wave beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not be but gay on such jocund company. I gazed and gazed and little thought what wealth the show had brought. For oft when on my couch I lie, on vacant or a pensive mood, they flash upon my inward eye, which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils.
Thank you very much to both of you. Courtesies, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would like to welcome Tiffany Hill, this morning's performer and a junior at Oregon School for the Deaf. Tiffany is from Eugene, where she attended a mainstream school before transferring to OSD. She would like hearing people to see what being deaf means and what signing looks like with expression. For Tiffany, signing is an art form to share with everyone. She won Oregon's 2009 statewide Poetry Out Loud competition, funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. She has earned the recognition of being the first deaf student to win a state Poetry Out Loud competition, and she will be the first deaf student to participate at the national level. Tiffany will have an all-expense-paid trip to Washington, D.C., where she will compete against 53 other contestants. Please join me in welcoming Tiffany to her House of Representatives and wishing her the best as she represents Oregon in the national spotlight on April 28th.
Thank you very much. It's great to have you in the house today. Thank you for honoring us with your presence. Further courtesies, let us move to our moment in our sesquicentennial history. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Henry Zenk, a consulting linguist with the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde community. According to the best information, the name Chinook originated in one native village on the north bank of the Columbia River near its mouth. When American and British seafarers came to the Columbia River in 1792, they quickly incorporated the lower river into the international fur trade. They adopted the name Chinook early to refer both to the Columbia River and the lower river's indigenous inhabitants, who for the most part closely resembled the people of Chinook Village in appearance, language, and culture. Chinook came into early general currency also for a local hybrid language that early traders used in preference to Chinookan languages, which were reputedly exceptionally difficult to learn. Before English came into the general regional currency, Chinook jargon was the lingua franca of the lower Columbia, linking natives of different tribes as well as natives and foreigners. During its heyday in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Chinook jargon was spoken throughout the Pacific Northwest, from Northern California to the Alaskan Panhandle, and from the coast well into the interior plateaus of the Fraser and Columbia Rivers. During this period, the language acquired an embryonic written literature composed primarily by missionaries who resorted to it as a way around the diversity and forbidding complexity of Northwest tribal languages. Recently, the language has been revived, notably at the Grand Ronde Indian community, where it is taught as a community heritage language. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative. For the courtesies, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the honor of introducing a group of pages today from Sayous Law Middle School, all eighth graders from the general area of Florence. The good representative from the Dunes and I share a boundary, and we aren't sure whose constituent you are, so I get to introduce you. First is Annalise Henry. She's very active in volleyball, basketball, social studies, and builders clubs, and has ambitions of being a middle school teacher. Welcome. Secondly, Anna Ray Foster, who is involved with student council, volleyball, and drama class, and has goals of being a pediatrician. And Adriana Roberts, also active in student council, volleyball, basketball, and builders clubs, and is looking into being a therapist, teacher, or lawyer. Welcome. And the fourth member of this group from Sayous Law Middle is Todd Denning. Hi, Todd. Todd is interested in marine mammals, scuba diving, science, and a good book. And he's thinking of being a dolphin trainer at Discovery Cove in Orlando, Florida. And I just want to make sure you understand that Oregon Coast Community College has a wonderful aquarium science program. Welcome.
That's district promotion 2 days in a row, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have today some very special guests from Southern Oregon. They come from Washington Elementary School. We have three pages here. If you'll stand when I call your name, Diana Cortez. Diana is a student in the sixth grade at Washington Elementary School. Her interests are student government. She is the class vice president, and her career goal is to be a doctor. The next one is Brittany Rozelle. Brittany is also in the sixth grade. She is in Washington's student government. She is the class president, and she wants to be a lawyer. The third is Cameron English. And I'm going to embarrass Cameron because I know his folks. In fact, before he was ever born, I sold his folks their first house in Southern Oregon. They are both teachers. One teaches at Washington Elementary. His father used to be a teacher and is now, I believe, in firefighting or something of that nature. Cameron is on student council. He's an AAU basketball, and he also would like to be a firefighter. In the back gallery, we have Washington Elementary School students. If you'll please stand up, and if we'll all welcome people from the Washington School, these youngsters. They have Jason Straub, Karen Glocklig, and Rob English is their chaperones. Thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to recognize two honorary pages today. Would you please stand up? We have pages from Kelly Middle School in Eugene. We have Danielle Duman, 8th grade. Her activities and interests are web leader, student council, band, sports, soccer, softball, volleyball, basketball, track. Her career goals are teacher, coach, or athletic trainer. And Alondra Rosales, track, yearbook, and organizer for today's honorary pages. Her career goals are to be an astronaut or designer. Welcome to you both, and good luck.
We want to welcome all of our pages. We appreciate your service to the House today. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to introduce 7 exchange students that are attending Hood River Valley High School and Cascade Locks High School. Up here in the upper gallery, 5 were able to make it today. Therese from Norway, Vinny from Brazil, Victor from Hungary, Ava from Germany, Ploy from Thailand, Mayuka from Japan, and Pablo from Argentina. And their staff accompanying them today is Leslie Melby. And I thank you and welcome to our house.
Welcome to Oregon and the Capitol. Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Clem? Yes, present. Excused for business of the House, Representative Gelser and Representative Greenlich. Excused, Representative Galizio. All other members are present. Messages from the Governor? Messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 105, 117, 378, 182, 609, 802, adopted SJM 12, passed the following House bill as amended by the Senate, House Bill 2540. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bills 213 and SJM 3.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SJM 12, urging Congress to enact tax refund intercept legislation permitting federal tax refunds to be used to pay overdue court-ordered financial obligations owed to states.
Measure read for the first time is passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 30, relating to government ethics and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 30B. Representative Roebland, followed by Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last session, our House and the Senate and the Governor signed some ethics reform legislation, which was, in my opinion, long overdue. But any time you make the sweeping changes that were made last time, you have unintended consequences that wreak havoc not only on those of us that were in this building, but in this case, on public officials throughout the state of Oregon. With that in mind, many people listened to local government officials, people from planning boards, school districts, cities, counties, and asked, and even without asking, were given information about what the changes had done. We heard of all of the people who resigned from commissions and boards because of the way the bill was written. We heard from judges and from law enforcement officials about having to input their personal information of their relatives and others on this form, causing them a risk. So taking into those comments, we made a decision that this session we needed to get a bill to the floor that addressed those cautiously, but in a global way, took care to make sure that what we were really doing in the ethics bill ended up being what we really did in the ethics bill. And so what you have before you in Senate Bill 30, and I'm going to go through a few of the things that it does, is that correction for our state, knowing clearly that what we really want to do is make sure that each of us making decisions as we vote and as we work forward do so with the perspective in our own minds that we're making the decision for what's best for Oregon through our own lenses, and that the public clearly has the right to have information about us so that they can draw their own conclusions with respect to that. The bill continues to do that, and I think I am pleased to serve with the people here who I believe come to this job with very high ethical concerns and want to do and continue to do the right things. Here's what the definitions do. The first part, definition of public official, it used to say to include, it said public officials to include an elected or appointed official, employee, agent, or otherwise. Well, the interpretation of the or otherwise has led it all the way down in some cases to be people who work for the city of Portland who are pool boys, and whether they are part of this whole structure and in fact could receive or take a gift, which doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense since that pool boy really has very little decision power to make with respect to that whole city's government. The second one is legislative or administrative interest. Again, what we've done, we've defined it more narrowly. It says a legislative or administrative interest means an economic interest distinct from that of the general public in a matter subject to the decision or vote of the public official acting in the public official's capacity as a public official. So the change is, it is decision or vote. So it has to do with the actual job that the person is doing in that decision and making the decision or vote that they have to consider having an economic interest, not a more global one. Removes the requirement of disclosure of extended list of relatives, requires redaction from the previous reports and declares an emergency. Hopefully everyone understands that. That's that long list would not have to be required any longer. Requires annual reporting and eliminates the quarterlies. And we've got a little work left to do on that one. But here what it's saying is what they found last time was that most of the quarterlies had nothing on them. You were just sending them in time after time with no new information. And that all that did was give to the commission a whole lot more pieces of paper that they had to go through without very much information. So we've gone back to doing the annual. Streamlines the SEI income reporting requirements. As you know, it said in the one quarterlies it talked about your top five sources of income. And for some people, finding that fifth one was very difficult because they couldn't figure out that they had a fifth one, and yet it didn't give an explanation as to what you do otherwise. So it goes back to what the old SEI said, and that is you have to report everything that is more than 10% of your income. So it gives a little clearer definition of what that means. Delays implementation of the electronic filing and disclosure system, in part because of the cost of that. Adds public officials to the, some public officials to the SEI filing list. And again, one of the things that we will continue to do, and I think even in the future people need to understand there may be others that need to be added, but it's taking a look at who are those public officials that are making decisions with public money and adding to that list as we get a more clear idea of who should be having to file this form for people. So we added some more this year who needs to file. There may be others in the future that we'll look at and want to file. Two important ones, I think, for anyone who is in public office is that it used to be that if you relied on the manual that they provided, that was a safe haven for you. If you did what the manual said, then you were clear of any fine or obligation that they later said, no, you shouldn't have done that. Well, they took that off of the BEC the last year, so the manual was not of any help to you. You still had to get an individual report. What this does is that when the manual is printed, if you follow it in good faith, then you are protected because you're doing what they have already approved. It also allows reliance on a staff advisory opinion. If you go in and ask them for an opinion, and they give you back a staff opinion, then that gives you another way of saying they asked, the staff looked it over, they gave you opinion, you followed that opinion, then in fact you are covered because that opinion was given and you accepted it. Allows the public to attend a reception or a meeting and meal with in an official capacity, not subject to the gift limit. What this one does is, I think people realize we had an amendment in there that said, if you go and speak and are on the agenda, you could accept the meal. That became fairly difficult, and what we found is lots of lists of people on to talk, and the issue here is, if there's a large group and you're invited as a representative, you can go, or as a city mayor, or as another public official, you can accept that meal, not part of the gift limit. Modifies the not-for-profit status and compliance with the 501c3 IRS designation as it relates to expenses paid for by a nonprofit organization. So what this one does is it says in the previous bill, the 503c had to show that less than 5% of its income came from a for-profit business. This one says, because it was very difficult oftentimes to even get that information back from the nonprofit as to where all of their resources and people who donated to their organization came from. So what this does is it says, if a 501c3 wants to pay for usual custom expenses to get you to a particular workshop, they can do so. You are still required to file that. So the problem that got some people in the past in trouble is there. You still can get in trouble if you don't file in your annual form that you took this money from this 501c3 to go to this program. So that does not change. Makes entertainment subject to the $50 limit. Didn't change the $50 limit, but it said if there is entertainment and or meals, the total limit is $50. And that clears up a problem that we had a little while that had to do, if you went to a place and had a dinner for $40 and there was entertainment going on, do I have to figure out if that entertainment was part of that or not? If it also means that if you're a city mayor and the school would like you to come to an event at the school for a play or something because they want to introduce the mayor is here at the play or some other activity, they could give you a ticket as long as it's under $50. You could go to that event and be there because they really wanted to get more people there. Those kinds of things become available here with the entertainment limit change. And another big change is outside business and volunteer activity. There are a lot of people who have jobs that come to these places to do their work, and in their regular business they have opportunities to go and check out equipment or do things. The way the bill was written, they weren't sure if they could do that, and so this corrects that one. So with that, I will turn it over to my friend and colleague to explain a little bit more. Thank you, colleagues, for your attention.
Co-carrier, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. Those of you who were here last session remember that I objected strongly to Senate Bill 10. I didn't have any particular insider wisdom, but I had spent the previous year on the Law Commission ethics review, so after spending a year in the weeds of these laws, I knew that Senate Bill 10 had some pretty egregious excesses that we would be having to deal with in this session. I think we all know what they are. Senate Bill 30 is a really good cleanup. In particular, it helps the local government piece, and let me name the three biggies that I see in Senate Bill 30 that will help a lot in making government work better. One, the SEI, we don't have this enormous and ridiculous list of relatives, obscure, and who knows, who cares whether my sister-in-law who lives in Denver is listed on an SEI. Never made sense, still doesn't. We've gotten that out of there. It also cuts back on all those filings that were where we wrote none and everybody else is writing none. And so we have a whole bunch of bureaucrats filing pieces of paper that say nothing, which is not exactly how we want the time of the Ethics Commission staff being spent. We would rather they were doing useful things like investigating real ethics violations, not how many pieces of paper have been filed. This bill gives good clarification to the difference between a public or legislative interest as opposed to personal activities. I think that's really important for all of us because we've all, and particularly in local government, have been wondering how can I even conduct my normal business under the broad definitions of Senate Bill 10. And it allows for attendance in community events. This is a critical piece of all of our jobs and all of local government's job, this access, getting out and meeting people and talking to people and being part of the community that you represent. Under Senate Bill 10, that was getting pretty tricky. You could go, you couldn't eat. There's food at everything. There's generally some sort of entertainment. It made no sense. It was an excess, and in Senate Bill 10, Senate Bill 30, that has been amended to a reasonable level. Lest you think that Senate Bill 30 was easy, let me tell you that the amendment that was moved in the House was the 34th amendment to Senate Bill 30. This is hard work. Fortunately, most of this hard, heavy lifting was done in the Senate. But let me explain the 34th Amendment, which was put in by your House Rules Committee. This is called the REDACT Amendment. And it is a critical piece because the filing deadline on the SEIs is tomorrow. The REDACT Amendment that's in this bill would allow the Ethics Commission to redact all those relatives and all the information that's on your SEI, which we do not have to file under Senate Bill 30. If you've already sent in your SEI, and if you haven't, shame on you, why haven't you? You know you had to list all those relatives. You had to put all that information. The REDACT Amendment allows the ethics folks to not give that information out if we can get Senate Bill 30 to the Senate and to the governor today. This is the fastest bill I've ever seen in my four sessions. So I urge you, vote aye on this measure. Let's get it. Let's get the REDACT Amendment, which was put in the House, concurred in the Senate. Let's get this to the governor so that we can go on with our busy lives and so local government has a chance to go on with their busy lives without all the angst about relatives and eating cookies at an event and having access in a reasonable way to the community. There is another bill out there. If there is an important piece relating to ethics that we have missed in this, there is another bill still live in the body that we can talk about adding things. But the important thing today is to get this bill out of here and over to the Senate and to the governor so that all of our SEIs, all our relatives are off the hook. Thank you for your attention.
Further discussion. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, a few of us, anyway, heard the pleas of constituents last year as Senate Bill 10 was implemented and came into this session with some minor fix bills, which ended up getting swept into one bill called Senate Bill 30. And I just want to thank the leadership of both chambers and the colleagues that worked much harder than I thought they would have had to have worked with Dash 34 amendments on this bill, but I just appreciate all the work done on this and incorporating my thoughts and ideals into Senate Bill 30, and I urge an aye vote.
Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Which carrier would you like?
Either one. They're both quite wonderful. Why don't you pick? Am I supposed to? How about Representative Roblin? He spoke first.
Question of Representative Roblin. Do you yield?
I do.
He does.
I really do appreciate the work on this bill and heard a lot of the really legitimate critiques. As far as the change in trips, all expense paid trips, as they relate to nonprofits, is there limitation for my local hospital association or the software association or my friend, the electric car CEO, who also happens to have a personal foundation, from sending me to Hawaii to, you know, learn about whatever? And maybe there isn't lobbying there that happens, or maybe there is, and if it is, it's indirect. What do we know about any limitation on that?
Two things. One, the organization that is going to offer any trip to you has to be a 501c3 corporation. It cannot be any of the other 501c organizations. It has to be a C3. And even if they do offer that, you are going to have to report it on your SEI form that you have received that gift. The hope is that there are some great organizations out there that have information that's both bipartisan and whatever that we have dealt with. We have, in the previous bill, it made a limitation of, I think it was 5% of the funds that came into the 501c3 or other 501c organization, and we found difficulties with some really great organizations, including one that I went to, Agriculture Committee. Eventually, they were able to figure out where all our funds came from, but the first year I paid for that separately just because going to this national agriculture meeting, even though it was a subsidiary of, and one of their organizing groups was NCSL, it wasn't in CSL, which we paid for as a legislature, and so as those that we pay for as a legislature to belong to, we can go. This opens that up a little bit more to 501c3s, but we still do have to report anything that we would have accepted from any of those groups.
Thank you. Question of the other carrier, Mr. Speaker?
Question of Representative Berger. Do you yield?
I do, Representative.
She does.
The other concern I have, and it is not a false thank you. I know that this is an enormous bill. 31 amendments is an enormous number, and really do appreciate the work on it. The other concern I have is about the events. Whereas before there was a limitation that was obviously had many silly results where you could only go and not pay if you were speaking, and now you're dealing with it. What is the limitation? And I now understand that the limitation is that I have to be there. We have to be there in our official capacities. Do we have some understanding of what that would mean? So when we are there in official capacity, or whether we are there because, you know, it's a boondoggle?
There are limits to official capacity, but further, there is a $50 limit from any host in any year. So this precludes somebody from repeatedly wining and dining somebody in the food and drink. It's the intent here, and I think we've gotten here, is to allow us to interface with the community and not be going to private dinners anywhere. That it's the public events where we are all invited, and it is part of a public sort of venue that we were trying to salvage without getting into the private dinners. However, it could be said, the reason this gets so complicated is that if you are a public official who is deeply involved in say, wooing a Japanese company to come to your community, you're going to have to go to private dinners. And that's what makes this very, very difficult. It's easy to make blanket statements about what we should or shouldn't do, but when you get into the weeds of what some, the different responsibilities, that's why 33 amendments. And basically this recognize that we couldn't just say you're going to have to pay for every meal that you get to, which is where we were last session, but allows for you to go to those public events and private events if they are appropriate and with good reporting requirements around these things.
Thanks very much.
Representative
Smith. Speak to the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, really appreciate the work on it, and also thanks for answering the questions that I didn't get them to you in advance. As you said, we're moving very fast on this bill, and I recognize we want to hit today's deadline. I don't want to be a picky dork on this area, and all I want to say is I do hope we'll look at your answer to my second question was really helpful. I do hope we'll continue to be vigilant and look at that first question or the answers to that first question, how we deal with nonprofit trips. There are an inordinate number of 501c3s, and merely having one does not mean that you are not engaged in policy-making lobbying activity. You're allowed to do some. Also, it doesn't mean that what would be happening there isn't the precise kind of thing we were worried about happening when Senate Bill 10 was passed. So anyway, I very much appreciate the work in the bill, and I hope we'll be attentive in that particular area. Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, some of you will remember that we have visited this issue of ethics reform in a previous session of this legislature. Additionally, some of you will remember that I am one of the people who was an outspoken critic of the whole issue of ethics reform as we had it to vote on before. And you may also remember that my basic argument was that the system that we had in place prior to the ethics bill that was passed out last session, it did in fact work. We had some improprieties that were done by members of the two bodies here in this building. And those people were called to task for that, and the inappropriate behavior was corrected. In light of the fact that the system that we had worked, I saw little or no need to change or amend it. However, having voted against that and spoken against it in the past, I am going to support Senate Bill 30 today. I still don't think it was necessary. I think it's a little bit of overkill, if that's maybe the right word, for it. It is, however, a significant improvement from what we had, and I think it will generally meet the concerns that the citizens in my community that I spent a lot of time visiting with in the interim, as they found out they were going to have to do some of these, some of this reporting, and the nature of some of that reporting, they found objectionable to a point of resigning from various committees that they might have been serving on in the area. And I think this bill will solve most of their problems, and it is a significant improvement. And I commend the Senate for the hard work that they've done on this, and I appreciate the work of the chair of the Rules Committee as he worked this issue very carefully, I believe, in rules, and I, as a consequence, personally going to vote for it this time and would ask for your support as well.
Any further discussion? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate also the good work of leadership from both chambers, both sides of the aisle, and committee chairs on this bill. I think it makes a number of important corrections and clarifications to the work that we did on Senate Bill 10. I do want to just try to be very cognizant of several of the changes that we're making. A couple have already been alluded to, the definition of 501c3 nonprofits and what's acceptable in terms of trips that we may take. The other point that I just want to try to bring to folks' attention, as I read the bill, it becomes permissible under Senate Bill 30 for local officials, public officials, including ourselves, to accept gifts of admission, food, and drink to events that we're attending in our official capacity. So, under my reading of the bill, for instance, if the Oregon Business Association or another organization would like to give us a $150 ticket to an event that they're putting on, and we're attending in our official capacity, it is permissible for us to accept that gift. One can imagine that, you know, this could cause controversy at some point down the road. In my view, it's not a reason to oppose the bill. I just want to be very clear that whereas under Senate Bill 10 we were limited to that $50, it's not my reading of the bill that that's the case under Senate Bill 30, that regardless of the price, of the cost of the food and drink and admission associated with the event, we are eligible to accept that and not subject to the gift limit. It appears in the list of exceptions to the gift rule, whereas under Senate Bill 10, you had to speak at the event, you had to be part of the program. Under this, we merely need to appear in our official capacity as public officials. So again, I'll be supporting the bill, but with a note of concern around the our ability to accept trips from 501c3s, as well as our ability to attend events with meals, beverages, et cetera, of unlimited value as long as we're attending in our capacity as public officials. Thanks. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to say, a lot of work. I really appreciate what the Senate did in getting this and crafting this bill. And as Representative Berger has already mentioned, we will be looking, and if you have ideas or suggestions, we have one more vehicle in which we can do a few little minor corrections if necessary. Other than that, I please urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes aye. Representative Wingard votes aye. Senate Bill 30B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Senate Bill 462 be made a special order of business immediately. Senate Bill 462. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 462 related to eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits and declared an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 462A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise in support of Senate Bill 462A, which allows Oregon to access up to $91 million and additional federal unemployment funds available through the federal stimulus package. Without exaggeration, passage of this bill is critical to helping thousands of Oregon families put food on the table and a roof over their heads. It has taken on added importance since yesterday when the latest unemployment figures were released. Oregon's seasonally adjusted unemployment rate now stands at 12.1% in March, up from a revised 10.7% in February. The state lost 14,000 jobs last month after losing 22,800 the month prior. The state's rate has now risen in each of the last 14 months, leaving an estimated 256,400 Oregonians without work. Senate Bill 462A helps ensure out-of-work Oregonians get credit from their most recent employment and receive the benefits they have earned. It changes the formula for calculating unemployment benefits, allowing workers to count their most recent experience when determining eligibility for unemployment insurance. Currently, eligibility is calculated on a base year or the first four of the most recently completed five calendar quarters. The change in Senate Bill 462A would allow claimants who have sufficient earnings in the most recent four quarters but who fail to qualify under the existing base year to receive unemployment benefits. The Oregon Employment Department estimates that about 8% or 17,000 unemployment claims per year are denied due to lack of sufficient wages or hours worked in the base year. about one-third of those claims, or 6,000 Oregonians, would now qualify using an alternate base year. This change will especially benefit low-wage workers because they are more likely than high-wage workers to have a history of intermittent or periodic work. Moreover, employers who pay unemployment taxes will also benefit. The Employment Department estimates that this infusion of additional federal unemployment funds will delay moving Oregon businesses to a higher unemployment tax schedule. There will be a greater obligation for us to meet once the federal stimulus dollars are exhausted, likely in the 2013-2015 biennium, but this obligation is projected to be no greater than what our self-adjusting system would have demanded without the additional federal funds and will have no consequences for the general fund. In the interim, this bill minimizes the impact of unemployment taxes on Oregon businesses. The latest unemployment figures suggest a longer winter than many anticipated. This economic downturn is no late frost that allows for the possibility of a quick greening. This is a hard frost that makes it clear some time must pass, and it is likely to get much colder before there are strong signs of rebirth. Senate Bill 462A is essential for thousands of Oregon families to see their way towards spring. I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 462A, which comes to you with unanimous due pass recommendation from your Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you. Question for the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Just for clarification, would the carrier please explain whether or not there are Oregon general funds that will be expended in funding this bill, or will this be all federal funds?
This will be all federal funds. Federal funds allow for 5% administration. The department will have 16 FTE working on administering this fund.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in the economic crisis in which we find ourselves, there is a need for us to have access to funds to stimulate the economy. The federal government has seen fit to provide one source of those funds by making additional unemployment benefits available to more Oregonians. At this time of economic need for stimulus, this is an opportunity for us to take advantage of.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes aye. Senate Bill 462A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Any further propositions and motions? Representative Cameron, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to return to the order of courtesies, please.
Representative Cameron requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we are honored today to have a guest with us, Paul Young. And he is here in the building because there's a Senate concurrent resolution that was passed today on the Senate side that we'll get a chance to vote on. Paul, if you'd like to stand up. Paul is the author, has sold over 5.5 million copies of The Shack, was on the New York Times bestseller list for over 35 straight weeks. And colleagues, Paul is here with his wife, Kim, and Scott Clausen, if you want to come up. They will be with us today at lunchtime in the room right outside the House chambers from noon to 1 if you want to come and visit and talk to Paul about his book. Welcome.
Welcome to the House. Good to have you here. Any further courtesies while we're there? First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3476, relating to school facilities, property, money, declaring an emergency.
bill is read for the first time and passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5036 relating to financial administration of the State Board of Pharmacy and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2138 relating to continuing care retirement communities. House Bill 2554 relating to definition of vulnerable user of a public way. House Bill 2789 relating to parole and probation officers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2968 relating to hearings for suspension of driving privileges. House Bill 3063 relating to Oregon natural areas.
Bills read for the second time were passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2528 relating to special events licenses.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2528. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2528 is a good bill because it's about two things that many of you like. It's about beer and it's about equality. It basically says if you sell beer, you should be treated the same way as people that sell wine. This was a bill that was brought to me by a local microbrewer who would like to be able to sell his product at fairs and other temporary events in the same way that local wineries can. Very fair, very simple. If you like beer, if you like equality, vote yes. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Beyer votes aye. House Bill 2528, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2655, relating to adverse possession of public land.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2655. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2655 clarifies that mass transit districts cannot lose land through adverse possession. Adverse possession is a process by which somebody can claim title to property if they occupy it or squat on it or otherwise use it for 10 or more years. Adverse possession cannot typically be done to government-owned property. This bill clarifies that mass transit district property is government property for purposes of adverse possession. It is a good vote. I urge it is a good bill, urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. House Bill 2655, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2671, relating to solid waste disposal.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2671A. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Urge an aye vote on House Bill 2671A. It's a clarification bill. Metro had advice from council to make clear that they be allowed to use fees to address diesel trucks, pollution, and environmental impacts generally. It's an authority they might already have. This simply makes it clear. It does not increase fees, nor does it offer additional authority to increase fees. It comes to you with a unanimous vote from committee, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. Representative Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2671A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3055, relating to revocation of an anatomical gift.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3055. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 3055 because a constituent of mine raised an issue for me that I found a little surprising, and I thought that you would all want to help me fix it. Many of us have designated ourselves as organ donors. There's a D on the back of our driver's license that says, in the event that we do not survive a trauma, we would like at least part of our bodies to be used to save someone else. Unfortunately, sometimes in emergency rooms, a grieving family, sometimes a family that's a little removed or estranged from the person who has just died, can't quite let go yet. And as a result, that person's last wishes are not honored because the emergency room is persuaded by the family to change that person's mind. This bill adds one simple section to Oregon law on anatomical gifts, and it says pretty simply, if I determine that I want my organs to be used to save someone else or to advance the cause of science, nobody but me can change that decision. If a minor has made that designation, nobody except that minor's parent or guardian can change that decision. That's all this bill does, but the important effect it will have is to make more life-saving tissues and organs available to preserve other people's lives and to honor the person who wanted to make that last final gift. I ask you to join me in supporting it.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Gilliam's aye. Widener is aye. House Bill 3055, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5001, relating to financial administration of the Oregon Board of Accountancy and declared an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5001. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. The Board of Accountancy protects the public by regulating the practice and performance of all services provided by licensed accountants. House Bill 5001 is the appropriation bill for this agency. The agency is fully supported by fees and receives no general funds. The budget recommended by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means totals $1,816,821 other funds and 7.0 full-time equivalent staff. The recommended budget includes $50,000 additional expenditure limitation to allow the board to continue to contract with qualified investigators to handle complex investigations. The Department of Administrative Services, or DAS, will unschedule this additional expenditure limitation until the board provides proof that funds are needed in the form of a copy of contractual agreements. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved continuation of the agency's five performance measures with a recommendation that the agency work with DAS and LFO during the interim to monitor two of its measures relating to contested cases and complaint investigations to determine if they provide meaningful and valid information. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5001.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close? She does not. And colleagues, we have 30 seconds. Let's see if we can actually all vote in the 30 seconds. These bills will all go faster if we each actually press one of our buttons in the first 30 seconds. Those who are of the opinion that the bill will pass, should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barton, off the floor. Okay, at least he wasn't here and didn't vote. House Bill 5001, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5029, relating to financial administration of the State Marine Board and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5029. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Bill 5029 is a budget bill for the Oregon State Marine Board. The Oregon State Marine Board was established in 1959 and is responsible for registering and titling all recreational boating vessels in the state. The board consists of five members appointed by the governor for four-year terms. The Marine Board is comprised of three separate program areas. These programs are dedicated to the Marine Board's mission of boater safety, education, and access in an enhanced boating environment. The committee approved an other funds budget of $25,949,147, a federal funds budget of $6,940,446, and 40 positions or 39 FTEs. The legislative approved budget is a 3.2% decrease in the 07-09 legislative approved budget. This reduction reflects the elimination of a one-time federal grant. The committee approved the agency's performance measures. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5029.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
No, thanks.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Representative Wingard votes aye. Representative Gilman votes aye. Representative Stigler votes aye. House Bill 5029, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2059, relating to health professional regulatory boards.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2059A. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. It's my privilege to present House Bill 2059A for your consideration this morning. This is an important measure to protect patients from improper conduct when they receive care from healthcare practitioners privileged to practice their professions under their state licenses. House Bill 2059 will affect 20 state health professional licensing boards and one state agency responsible for regulating health professionals. These entities are listed in Section 1 of the bill and include the Oregon Medical Board, the Oregon State Board of Nursing, the State Board of Pharmacy, the State Board of Dentistry, among others. This bill makes two important changes in the practices of these regulatory entities. First, House Bill 2059 will require that all healthcare licensees in Oregon report any other licensees prohibited conduct. That's a defined term in the bill. It includes certain categories of crimes. This provision is the heart of the bill because there is currently no explicit and uniform requirement in current law that such criminal conduct by healthcare licensees must be reported. That lack of clear state policy leaves healthcare professionals confused about what to do when they observe another licensee's improper conduct involving a patient that is or may be criminal. It is also not clear under current law what the licensing boards are supposed to do when they receive such reports and what consequences there are, if any, for reporting other licensees' misconduct. The bill before you resolves those issues, making the reports by health professionals of criminal conduct mandatory. House Bill 2059 requires licensees to report prohibited conduct to the regulatory board that licenses the offending licensee. It also makes clear that when such reports are to be forwarded to law enforcement and makes the report confidential within all licensing boards. Of course, such reports still can and should also be made directly to law enforcement officials. In addition, the bill requires licensees to promptly self-report any misdemeanor or felony conviction, as well as any arrest for a felony. Unlike the reports by other licensees, these self-reports are not limited to situations involving patient harm. Importantly, however, while these self-reports will become part of the licensee's file, they cannot become the basis of disciplinary action against a licensee unless the conduct involves the licensee's professional practice. This is a long-standing requirement of Oregon law for all professional licensing, not just the health professions, and House Bill 2059 does not change that standard. Second, House Bill 2059 standardizes the reporting of prohibited conduct and of unprofessional conduct across all the health professional licensing boards. This is important because different reporting expectations result in confusion and incomplete reports. Criminal acts against a patient should be reported, whether they are committed by a doctor, a nurse, a dentist, or a therapist. House Bill 2059 removes any ambiguity about the state's expectation that health professionals report such misconduct. In addition, the bill will make it a Class A violation with a fine of up to $720 if a health professional knows about and fails to report prohibited conduct. Under this bill, we no longer will expect every health professional to know not only their own, but every other health profession's practice act and what may be misconduct. Instead, we are declaring explicitly that illegal conduct must be reported when it harms or threatens to harm a patient. House Bill 2059 specifically defines prohibited conduct and unprofessional conduct and applies these requirements to all of the health profession licensing boards. No longer can each board define these terms by its own rules, because doing so creates confusion and loopholes that result in non-reports of information that the boards should receive. These reports will go to the board responsible for overseeing the licensee, and the bill specifies strict time frames for handling such reports. That's important because this misconduct involves allegations of criminal acts against patients. There should be no excuse for a regulatory board to take months to ascertain whether such misconduct has occurred. They should act appropriately and quickly, and House Bill 2059 requires them to do so. In sum, colleagues, House Bill 2059 is a focused and necessary declaration of state policy concerning misconduct by healthcare licensees. It recognizes the responsibilities of licensing boards, balances the interests of health professionals, and most importantly, protects patients from improper conduct. I urge your aye vote on the engrossed version of House Bill 2059.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Very nice. House Bill 2059A, having received the constitutional majority all in the first 30 seconds, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? So ordered. I would note that in the gallery we have a group of about 20 students who are visiting from a high school in Stuttgart, Germany. You may want to stand up. You're visiting from Stuttgart. This high school apparently has sent students to Salem for the last 9 years. Not these same students, but their predecessors. Welcome to Oregon and the Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also in the balcony, I have a few students here, fourth and fifth graders from St. James Elementary in McMinnville. They're here visiting us today and taking a tour of the Capitol, and they had the opportunity to come down here on the House floor and actually play Speaker, and they said they'll be taking your job someday when they get a chance, Mr. Speaker.
They will before you do, Representative. Further courtesies. Seeing none, back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2255 related to manufacturing dwelling park nonprofit cooperatives.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2255A. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2255A continues and improves upon work begun by the 2007 legislature to address the problem of manufactured home park closures. Exciting stuff. 65,000 Oregonians live in about 1,300 manufactured home parks across the state. About 55% of park residents in Oregon are over 55 years old, and 75% of them live alone. Park closures may displace these fragile Oregonians. Perhaps the best solution to the park closure problem is the voluntary sale of the park to the residents, often after the residents form a resident cooperative. The park landlord is able to sell the park at a competitive price while the residents retain their homes and increase their stability. 2007 legislation provided several tools to assist with this concept, including the creation of the Manufactured Dwelling Park Nonprofit Cooperative Corporation. Try saying that five times fast. HB 2255A continues this effort by, one, encouraging lenders to lend on manufactured homes in resident-owned parks as real estate, not as personal property. They can do this by, A, providing that these manufactured homes may be recorded in county deed records so that lenders may better keep track of them, B, requiring the co-op to notify the lender if the park resident's occupancy is being terminated so that the lender can step in and protect its investment, and C, requiring co-ops to allow lenders to store repossessed manufactured homes in the co-op park for up to a year while the lender seeks another buyer. Secondly, the House bill addresses concerns raised by the Department of Consumer and Business Services about co-op memberships constituting securities which must be registered. HB 2255A was introduced at the request of the Department of Housing and Community Services. It received a unanimous vote in the House Consumer Protection Committee. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Winger, do you wish to close?
No.
He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam does vote aye. Representative Garrett votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. House Bill 2255A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2369, related to motor vehicles.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2369A. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2369A establishes that settlement within 60 days of motor vehicle accident does not preclude the payment of additional benefits should further medical treatment be necessary. This bill here essentially takes it from 30 days to 60 days and opens it up for medical conditions if somebody gets hurt in an accident so they don't have to settle at that time. It's a good bill, went passed unanimously, would appreciate everybody's aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Winder, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Roblin votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. House Bill 2369A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2371, relating to privacy of identification documents.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2371A. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. College House Bill 2371A comes to you from the Consumer Protection Committee, where it passed to the floor with unanimous support of its members. That in and of itself is important. The purpose of this bill is to prevent what was referred to as data harvesting from our state-issued driver's license and identification cards. It restricts situations in which private entities may read, store, share, or sell information that's electronically retrieved from such identification documents, or when, in other words, when your card is what they call swiped. That means something different to people of my generation. But some limited exceptions are allowed for age identification for the purpose of purchasing age-restricted goods, fraud prevention systems, providing emergency assistance, or with the individual's permission. The bill's primary purpose is to prevent any entity from using the information obtained from swiping the card for other purposes, including marketing. I urge your yes vote on House Bill 2371A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Representative Esquivel, votes aye. Representative Bentz, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett is off the floor. House Bill 2371A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2393, relating to sheriffs.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2393A. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring you House Bill 2393 from the Revenue Committee. It passed with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. This bill addresses the disparity between a sheriff's department's investment of time and resources of delivering a legal document and the fee paid by the individual or company requesting the service. This bill also provides a framework for a website if, and that's a key word, if all sheriffs enter into a governmental agreement. So let me explain for a minute what civil service means and what we're talking about here. I'll give you a few examples. These are papers from creditors for judgments, witness subpoenas from attorneys, eviction notices from landlords. Those are certainly not the most fun ones to do. And this is not an exhaustive list, but that is certainly a few of the papers that are served. Now, some of these papers, and as some of you know, I was a deputy sheriff, and on occasion at the briefing table, I was handed a stack of four or five papers and had to go out and attempt to serve those with my colleagues. That was not one of the fun things that we did, but we would go out and try to serve those papers. And sometimes we'd knock on the door, the person would come to the door, we'd hand them their paper. It's not like TV, we don't say you're served, and we'd leave. Sometimes I would try for my entire week to serve that paper, and other deputies on other shifts would. We'd invest a lot of time in those papers, because ORS says it's the sheriff's job to provide that service. If it's requested, a sheriff's department, our 36 local sheriffs, have to provide that service. Well, interesting thing that I'm actually carrying a bill that increases a fee, and I wrestled with that. This fee is different than the other fee increases that we've talked about. First of all, it is set in statute. This isn't the difference. It's set in statute. However, if somebody doesn't want to pay that fee, if they don't want to pay that fee, they go to a private individual. Anybody can serve papers. They can go somewhere else. Sheriff's departments do not have a monopoly on this, and let me guarantee you from personal experience, they don't want the monopoly. They don't want to have to do these in an entire patrol shift. Now, let me tell you, when I was out doing this, and this was just a piece of what I had to do, when I was out knocking on doors, I wasn't writing speeding tickets. I wasn't investigating accidents. I wasn't going to domestics. I wasn't throwing people that should be put in jail in jail. This pulls the Sheriff's Department away from what these other arguably more important duties are. The other difference in this fee increase is it's very focused. In addition to the lack of a monopoly, if I want the service, I pay for the service. And let me tell you what that service costs for the average legal document right now. Typically $28. This would raise it to $36. In that $36, you get multiple attempts by the Sheriff's Department. You also have an office staff dedicated primarily, or most often, to preparing these documents. And they have to be perfect, absolutely perfect. So I bring you this because, and I wrestled with doing this, because I've done this. I know it takes a lot of time. And the time that that sheriffs are spending serving papers, they're not doing the tasks that my constituents tell me they really want, which is traffic enforcement, which is handling these calls. There was no opposition in committee, no opposing testimony to this whatsoever, including somebody that represents collection companies. This is not about growing government. This is just freeing up our local governments to do what it is we primarily expect them to do. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Springer, do you wish to close?
I do not.
She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard votes no. House Bill 2393A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2405, relating to services that use Internet protocol.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2405A. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move House Bill 2405A to be re-referred to the Committee on Business and Labor.
Representative David Edwards moves that House Bill 2405A be re-referred to the Committee on Business and Labor. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion. The bill should go back to committee for a simple, and I repeat, simple technical fix suggested by legislative counsel. The fix will clarify that the bill will not impair the ability of cities to levy franchise fees or manage rights of way. The chair assures me the bill will be returned to the floor as soon as practicable.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2405A be re-referred to the Committee on Business and Labor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. I need to consult with the clerk. Do we need to do a... Okay. We are good with an oral vote. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2470, relating to dogs.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2470A. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2470A is brought to you from the Consumer Protection Committee. This bill increases protections for man's best friend and gives law enforcement a clear ability to protect dogs. Colleagues, we've had a lot of issues that have been in the press and certainly issues that have been brought to our attention about the care and the breeding of dogs in the state of Oregon. We listened to constituents from all over the state representing many different interests on this bill, and as chair of the committee, I immediately formed a work group to consider amendments to this bill and to listen to all the different issues involved in this bill. The work group was comprised of law enforcement, humane advocates, dog trainers, dog breeders, veterinarians, as well as both my vice chairs. There was significant input from all the stakeholders on components of the bill, and while no consensus was reached with regards to the cap language in the engrossed bill, the bill represents significant discussion between all parties regarding the care of dogs, buyer protections, and retail pet store obligations. We did have a lot of consensus around many parts of this bill. The bill brings greater minimum care standards for dogs involved in breeding operations. It gives dog buyers who are deceived by unscrupulous dog breeders a remedy. It requires retail pet stores to present a notice of origin to the dog buyer upon purchase. Reputable breeders will not be affected by this bill. During consideration of this bill in committee, breeders testified to providing these care standards already. There were no breeders that came forward that we could find that were affected by the cap in this bill as well. In addition, most of the breeding community who contacted my office already offer contracts with sufficient disclosure and good protections for both buyers and the pet dealer. Colleagues, House Bill 2470A simply states that no one can own, possess, or control 50 sexually intact dogs over 2 years old. Breeders oftentimes have to sell puppies within 2 years if they are concerned about remaining under that cap. This cap would still allow for hundreds of dogs to be bred by one breeder and would allow for puppies to be considered for shows because of the 2 year timetable. Minimum care standards increased from current ORS 167.310 under this bill. It adds the ability to stand and turn freely in permanent living space. Exercise period in open area outside of the enclosure of 1 hour per day. Prohibits slats in the enclosure and stacking of enclosures. Exemptions for transportation and temporary facilities shelters, boarding kennels, humane society, and vets. The bill also has a restriction or a requirement, I should say, that for each 75 dogs, there should be one staff person tending to those dogs during the 8-hour workday. There's also a Lemon Law, a right of return of a dog if found to be diseased within 15 days of purchase. And if within 1 year a congenital disorder that was not disclosed at the time of purchase is determined by a veterinarian to exist, a buyer can return, exchange, or receive reimbursement for the cost up to the purchase price. And colleagues, one of the most important pieces of this bill is the requirement that the retail pet store disclose the breeder and the location of that breeder for the sale of dogs in their stores. It's a very simple bill, but it has some very complex pieces to it. Took a lot of time for our committee to consider this bill. It does allow for an incredible amount of dogs. I might add that the state of Washington just added a similar bill with a limit of 50 sexually intact dogs, but not for 2 years or older, but for 6 months or older. Colleagues, this is a good bill that gives our animal regulators the ability to take a look at these dogs. It also addresses the animal hoarders out there, the dog hoarders who are out there that we've become witness to with the issue in many parts of this state where we find dogs that are being treated inhumanely, that are subject to disease, lack of food, lack of attention, and lack of good care. This bill had many veterinarians come forward and support this bill. There were a couple that had concerns with this bill as well. The Veterinary Association from Oregon remained neutral on the bill, but I personally was contacted by far more veterinarians in support of this bill than I was opposed to the bill. As well, the Oregon Animal Control Council, who was represented by many of the animal regulation authorities around this state, unanimously endorsed this bill. Colleagues, this is a good bill. It deserves an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I voted, and by the way, this is the second time in 9 years I've talked 2 days in a row, so I don't stand up very often. But I voted yes in committee for the bill. I had some problems with it. I really disagreed with the cap. What we should have been looking at is the standard of care. You can mistreat one or two dogs, or you can mistreat 50. Same in a family, same with any of those types of things. And I experienced something different than what the chair talked about. By far and away, the emails that I got from veterinarians, not the ones who showed up, it was way swayed that they did not like the bill. And you also saw where the state association couldn't come together, so that should tell you something there. And I'm going to vote for the bill today, but I'm wondering, will we start see bills next year to restrict dairies to 50 cows? Will we see only allow you to have 25 chickens in a chicken coop? How many fish in your fish bowl? Where does it go? You need to understand that, yeah, there was concern for the health of animals. That's true. We all feel that way. All of us that have our animals, we love them. We want to take care of them. But this does restrict business, which is one of the things we're trying to promote. And I'm willing to bet you that all the puppy mills, all of those hoarders, and all of those people will still be violating the law, and you're going to be picking them up with the existing laws you've got. Because there's no program right now in this bill that requires anyone to go out and examine those people annually. So how are you going to know unless you get a complaint? If it was a legitimate complaint, you can ask the three or four police officers that you've got here. If you've got probable cause, you could go there and find that out. So I'm going to support the bill, but I think we have to be careful about this type of legislation.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise today in support of House Bill 2470. Currently, Oregon has no statewide laws to regulate or limit puppy mills. Our state must do better for woman's best friend. Puppy mills are breeding facilities that mass produce puppies for sale in pet stores, over the internet, and directly to the public. Dogs can be stacked in filthy wire cages or kennels, often with little veterinary care or human interaction. They are treated not like pets, but like cash crops. Mother dogs can be constantly bred and kept in continuous confinement. They are destroyed or discarded when they can no longer churn out puppies. This bill creates one of the most effective and comprehensive puppy mill laws in this nation. It would cap the number of breeding dogs and mass breeding facilities and require basic humane care standards, including provisions that dogs be allowed out of their cages daily and that they be kept in clean, well-ventilated facilities. In the past few years, five notorious puppy mills in Oregon were investigated and shut down by law enforcement authorities. In all five cases, dozens, even hundreds of dogs were discovered living in filthy, crowded, inhumane conditions. As recently as within the past 3 weeks, the Humane Society rescued nearly 200 dogs from a mass breeding facility in eastern Oregon. Breeding dogs at puppy mills are forced to live in a life devoid of the things that dogs need: exercise, clean living space, medical care, and the love and attention of humans. These facilities may not always be illegal, but they are almost always inhumane. The puppies are often sick and suffering from hereditary defects and lack of necessary veterinary care. Colleagues, in your Consumer Protection Committee, we heard hours and hours and hours of testimony. There were hundreds of people in the halls, which I'm sure you saw at the time. In discussions with breeders, most already meet the standards set forth in this bill. It has become clear that few, if any, reputable breeders in Oregon keep more than 50 breeding dogs. That means that only puppy mill operators, the intended targets of this legislation, will be affected. A broad coalition of groups and individuals have spoken in favor of this bill, including the Oregon Humane Society, the Oregon Animal Control Council, veterinarians, dog breeders, prosecutors, law enforcement officers, and individuals who live with dogs rescued from puppy mills. I urge you to vote aye on House Bill 2470. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaker.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I stand because I sat in the work groups, I sat in the committees. The Oregon Humane Society is the one who was supportive of this bill. The Oregon Humane Society was advertising on the radio to have people come down and support this bill. The Oregon Humane Society got about 38 people to come down here in support of this bill. The dog breeders had over 130 people down here against this bill. 130 people taking time out of their day to come down and oppose this bill. We had Oregon Cattlemen's, we had the Oregon Dairymen's, we had a lot more veterinarians against this bill than we did for this bill. This bill is going to have a huge fiscal impact. How it comes back, and they say it does not have one, but when people start calling and reporting, somebody needs to go check. Request to use a visual aid. Mr. Speaker.
Representative Widener requests unanimous consent for purposes of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Proceed.
Right here in my hand are the current laws in regards to animal care. Every case that came before us, the people were prosecuted and busted, facing $10,000 fines, some of them going to jail for dog abuse. Our current laws are taking care of the protection. This bill just goes too far, and this goes way beyond nanny state laws if I've ever seen them. This is something we need to oppose, and I urge everybody to vote no on this House bill. Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question for the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I did get this question ahead of time to the carrier. If a trainer or handler attends a 2 or 3 day field trip, or even sled dogs come here for a sled dog race, does Section 2 of this bill apply to them, and why or why not?
Thank you for that question, Mr. Speaker. The answer to the question is no. I do not believe that Section 2 would apply to that handler or trainer as such going to a show or to an event. Section 2, subsection 3, or subsection 4 of the bill, subsections 2 and 3 of this section do not apply to, and it goes through a list, and it also mentions a person that is transporting dogs or a boarding kennel. And those two provisions, I believe, would rule out that that particular trainer who's transporting dogs to events around the state. And in reference to the boarding kennel, also mentions in the bill under Section 2, that provides care for a fee for dogs that stay at the facility an average of less than 30 days. So I believe under those two provisions, the trainer or the dog show person who's transporting these dogs or to events around would not fall under Section 2 of the bill.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A follow-up, if I may.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
Carrier does.
Yes. Can you? Is there a definition of transporting dogs?
No, just the common language dictionary would probably be the definition of transporting, and the same for the definition of dog.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I think we all rise today in favor of shutting down inhumane operations throughout the state of Oregon that abuse any kind of animal, whether it's a puppy or any type of animal. And as an owner of Labrador retrievers that have gone through training, and as one who has observed what happens in our state and the amount of people that come to our state and travel around our state and go through these field trials in our state, if you've never gone to one, you ought to go some weekend up at Savis Island or right here at between Woodburn and here. There's some that go on. They're wonderful to see how great these animals are when properly trained and properly handled. And we have people around our state that are excellent at doing this. The reason I ask the question is because you go to these field trials and there will be trucks pulling trailers with several animals in those trailers. And they're parked there for 2 or 3 days. And I'm not sure that is covered under transportation. And if you look at Section 2, those people in those events would be in violation of the way this bill is. The second thing, the out was given as a boarding kennel. Most of the dogs, I know my dog that got a junior title on her was at the trainer for, I believe, the first time 13 weeks. That's not an average of 30 days, and that's the definition of a boarding kennel. Colleagues, there's some problems with this bill that affect businesses and jobs and the economy of this state. I'm not going to argue, and I don't think any of us are argue against shutting down places that are abusive and that do bad things to animals. But I will be voting no on this bill today because we need to fix this bill, and there was a couple of those issues that were brought up in the work group that those people that are professionals in our state need that help in this bill. So I urge your no vote, send a message to the Senate that we need those fixes on the Senate side.
Representative Schaffler.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Thank you. I support this bill. I think it's sensible regulation. I grew up with a lot of hunters myself, and on occasion they'd breed their dogs, and they just felt, I like my dogs more than a whole lot of people I know, and I reckon there's a whole lot of people who would like my dogs more than me, but I just think there needs to be a little face on this. I think this is reasonable regulation. I don't think a reputable dog breeder is going to be harmed by it. If there are issues like the kennel boarding that the good representative referred to, need to be changed on the Senate side, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But a year and a half ago, we adopted our little Sadie dog. She's a little Pomeranian. We rescued her. She was rescued from one of these disreputable breeders who I know we're all in agreement should be shut down. And they had to shave all her hair, all her fur off, and because it was just so matted and she was so abused. And she has a number 75 tattooed into her ear. That's how they kept track of this animal. God knows how many they had. But it's taken a year and a half for that dog to warm up to me. She adores our little girl. She acts like a regular Pomeranian, but she just is scared to death of men. Now she's befriended me after a year and a half of scratching her behind the ears and giving her treats and treating her right. But I just wanted to put a face on it. I agree no one on this floor, regardless of how you vote on this bill, wants to allow that abuse to go on. I think this is reasonable regulation. I urge your vote.
Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I've struggled with this bill. We've had hundreds of emails. And I'm trying to figure out what it is that's causing me difficulty with this bill. And I think I've figured it out. This is a civil rights bill for dogs, which, I mean, who doesn't love dogs? But when we go to pass legislation, it's wise to think about what's the precedent that's being set and what are the unintended consequences. I mean, as we talk about dogs, our puppies, this is a puppy mill bill, and we don't want to allow people to churn out puppies and we have to stop this mass breeding facilities, and dogs must be taken out of their cages daily. Who doesn't support that? But the consequence of this is that dogs aren't the only animals out there. And so why don't we expand this bill? What we need is a chicky mill bill. We need a picky mill bill. And we can tell Willamette Egg Farm that they need to have those chickies out of their cages for an hour a day. And we don't want mass breeding facilities for chickens. I mean, I was at Joe by the Grange just last weekend, and there are little chickies there for sale. Well, I'm sure there's a mass breeder out there that's just breeding those chickies. And we've got to stop that. And what about pigs? We eat pork. If you go to see it is a despicable place to go and see these mass farms where they're raising pork, and they've got these cages stacked on top of each other, and the feces and urine and the stench is horrible. And then they're taken out, and what do we do with them? We kill them. Well, we got to stop those mass facilities that lead to the slaughter of innocent animals. Of course, vegetarianism has its drawbacks too. But the point is that while we view this as a pet bill and put pets on their own pedestal, we could very easily just change a few words and take out the word dog and insert chicken or pork. I mean, this is a canine civil rights bill, but what about other animals? If we're going to help puppies, let's help all the animals. Or let's stop and think about what the consequences are of this bill. We're saying 50 is a rational number to limit dogs. Well, why not 51? What about a clean dog facility that has 52 dogs and there's a birthday? And, you know, so now they got 52 and they're over two. They're outlaws. I mean, you see, this is kind of a ridiculous thing, because what we want is clean facilities where animals are being raised or bred. And what we have with puppy mills are people, and I'm talking about clean puppy mills, not the bad puppy mills. The clean puppy mills are breeders who have essentially taken the animal dog and made it into a livestock situation. And they take them and they sell them in mass, like people that are doing this with chickies now because it's springtime. I think that we ought to vote no on the bill, not because we don't care about dogs and not because we don't want to enforce the laws that we have, which help assure that animals are not abused, but because of the precedent that it sets for other animals. Animals are not the same as human beings, and a dog is no better, in my opinion, than is a chicken or a pig because I choose not to discriminate against animals. I believe that we should be fair and accepting, and we should show tolerance for all animals, and we should be against this bill. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do wish to close, and I appreciate all the comments about the bill, and to the good representative from Southern Oregon, you know, I suppose we could have another bill on other animals, but, you know, frankly, in our culture, we don't eat dogs. Perhaps we do eat chicken and livestock. There's a slightly different, definition there that you're speaking of when you're starting to speak of pigs and, you know, livestock. And we do have rules about the care and humane treatment of those animals, as well as the representative from Oregon's wine capital has brought up. There are current laws out there for such care standards. But this particular bill brings another level of care standards, another level of requirements, specifically for dogs, which are raised to be sold as pets to people. And that's really a different issue. And quite frankly, it's an issue that we do have to take a look at. You know, these standards and care requirements go a little bit further than our current statutes under care for just livestock, captive animals, and pets. And the reason this bill's going farther is because there's a problem with puppy mills in this state. Anybody who reads the paper can look at that, where we have. People that are being found with over 200 dogs, 300 dogs. And so this bill's trying to put a cap on that. And so where is that cap? Should it be at 50 sexually intact dogs that are over the age of two, which would enable a particular breeder to have literally hundreds of dogs? And so to address that, we says, okay, one person can't care for more than 75 dogs, and that seems like an awful lot. To me, but, you know, maybe it can be done, but we should have some sort of standard here to make sure that in this instance, for dogs at least, that are being bred for the purposes of economic venture, that they're being treated correctly, that they're being bred properly, that they're getting the care they need. You know, you tell a lot about a society by the way it treats animals, by the way it treats people who can't defend themselves, by the way it treats its poor, and specifically, how do they treat animals? This is about how we as a people morally look at life. And we should treat life like it deserves to live a comfortable life. And it deserves, whether it's a dog or whether it's a person, they deserve to be clean. They deserve to be fed and have good water. They deserve to not be caged so tightly they can't even turn around. Just want to address the fiscal part of this bill real quick. The legislative fiscal says there's a minimal fiscal impact. No statement was issued. The animal regulators specifically came back with emails to me basically stating that the cost to agencies involved in handling these cases can deplete a budget very rapidly. The impact on the public is one of economic loss, first in the price of the puppy, then in the veterinary bills, as these pups are often sick. Then the emotional costs, when nothing they can do can cure the physical or mental behavioral ills the puppies have. It also goes on that this law, according to Carrie A. Tyler, Animal Services Deputy with the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office, The idea that this law would drive the puppy mill operators underground is unfounded. I believe this law would act as a tool to prevent and reduce these cases and divert them from entering this overloaded court system. It would virtually save money for our animal shelters because, hopefully, according to the animal regulators and the enforcement people out there working for our county sheriffs, this would reduce the amount of dogs that end up in our shelters. That would reduce the cost. Folks, this is a simple bill, and surely you can pick up apart a particular word and ask for a definition in any statute that we have to the point of ridiculousness. What does this mean? What does that mean? I think the intent of this bill is very clear, and I think the enforcement of this new law once passed will definitely help rid our state of unscrupulous breeders who time and time return to continue to breed dogs in inhumane environments. And folks, this is something that people who buy dogs shouldn't have to wonder why their dog acts so weird, why their dog can't be trained, and what's wrong with my dog physically. This dog is also about protecting the consumer. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Representative Chris Edwards is aye. Representative Wisnett is aye. House Bill 2470A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And in the interest of time, colleagues, I think we will entertain unanimous, the chair requests unanimous consent that the remaining bills listed on the third reading calendar be carried over to the third reading calendar for Wednesday, April 15th, 2009. Is there objection? So ordered. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 105 relating to penalties for environmental law. Senate Bill 117 relating to dentistry. Senate Bill 182 relating to treatment of financial organization tax law prescribing effective date. Senate Bill 378 relating to long-term care advisory committee and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 609 relating to protective orders and tax court proceedings and prescribing effective date. House Bill 802 related to distilled liquor.
Bills read for the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Chair requests unanimous consent that the bills remaining on today's third reading calendar be carried over to their proper place on the Wednesday, April 15th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, colleagues, I'd just like to extend an invitation to have you join us in room 257, and we will have the author of The Shack with us.
Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just quickly, I think we had some good debate today, but I think we should remind, and I know, Mr. Speaker, you are committed to this, we should remind everyone that to keep respect for one another and decorum. And so I hesitate to bring it up, but I want to remind the representative from the Bedrock District to refrain from using terms like picky dork when referring to the representative from the Bedrock District. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment, Representative Jensen. Representative Tomei, adjournment until 10:15, Wednesday, April 15th.
I move that the House adjourn until Wednesday at 10:15 a.m.
Representative Tomei moves the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Wednesday, April 15th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.